A mystery which so far seems to yield no solution. If I fail, it is highly possible that I and all of you will die sooner than we had hoped. Do I exaggerate? Of course, I'm a playwright. That's my method. My name is Trent, Michael Trent. I'm a playwright. I work out of Stamford, Connecticut. That's where my office is. That's where this case began. When Philip Stone came to see me with a notion for a play, generally, I don't take commissions. This time, I did.
I can only tell you it's a matter of great urgency, and I would appreciate it if I could see you tonight.
I never met the man, though I knew, of course, who he was. Who didn't? He told me what he wanted, which was a play, but gave no details. He assured me he'd pay well. A man as rich as Stone ought to pay well. I told him to come right out. To put it mildly, I was in great need of money at the time. Most playwrights need money all of the time. It's not one of your top-paying professions. Besides, I had a wife, a kid, and two golden retrievers to support. As things now stand, you won't see any one of them. I want to keep them out of this. This is my office, at least as it looked 10 months ago, on the night when Stone came by and changed my life irrevocably. Actually, in real life, where these events occurred, it doesn't look like this at all. Neither do the characters who were and still are involved. I have altered these details not so much to protect the innocent as to heighten interest. That's how playwrights work. We've got limited time. You don't want to stay here all night any more than I do. Yeah?
Mike, there's a guy out here. Says his name is, get this, Philip Stone.
Hey, dollface, this guy is Philip Stone. Tell him I'll be with him in a minute. It was important that Stone think I was in the middle of a project. If he didn't, he might figure he could give me cheap. My pulse was going wild. I'd been waiting to sell out for years. This could be it. Send Stone in. Actually, I don't even have a secretary, and that's all I'm going to tell you. From here on, you're going to have to figure out what I'm making up and what I'm not on your own. Be warned, the roads are slippery, very slippery, the ones we're going on tonight.
Trent?
Yeah, just a second. Be right with you. Finishing touches here. Yes, yes, good. Oh, what a scene. Never seen a scene like this.
Perhaps this moment is inopportune.
No. Last few lines. Real bitch, this play. Been working on it for a year. Commission from RSC. There. Yes, got it. Beginning to think I'd never get it right. Mr. Stone, Mr. Trent, nice to meet you. Stella, hold my calls. Can I offer you a drink?
Thank you, yes, the scotch would be most welcome.
All I've got is beer.
Oh, well, I'll stay like this. Mr. Trent, I'm not a man who wastes words or time. Words take time to say, time is precious. I've conceived an outline for a play. Now, I wish to see this play produced, and quickly, and I'll provide the capital. You write it. How much do you want, and when can you begin?
Stella!
Yes, boss?
Be an angel. Run down to BJ's and get a bottle of scotch.
Right, boss.
If you're going to invent a secretary, you might as well go all the way.
Well, this is just very flattering. Let me check my appointment book here. See what sort of commissions I've got lined up. Here it is, yes. And you say you want this play written?
Right away.
Right away, I see. Well, I could shuffle this, I guess. Delay this commission here. Might give up some work over here. That's something I really wanted to do, too. Damn. What kind of dollars are we exactly talking about?
As I said before, tell me what you want.
So I did hear him right. What I want? Well, that's not so easy to say. It depends very much on how long this will take to write, then to rewrite, and then to rewrite that revision. I do very careful work, I'm sure you've heard. Then, of course, we have to factor in research. If this project, I don't know it yet, requires some sort of research.
Yeah, it will.
There you are. So that must be factored in. Plus, of course, transportation, limousine. Mind you now, I don't need a limousine.
I use a limousine, no reason why you shouldn't.
God, the theater needs men like you.
Don't you want to hear my idea?
No, I'll just begin. Obviously, if it matters all this much to you, it's got to be worth something. I'll need a day or two to figure out the terms, of course. Where can you be reached? You seem to have appeared from thin air.
My business card.
Ah, good. Thank you. Well, I don't see that we need to discuss this any further. You've got yourself a playwright, I've got myself a producer. Is this the idea?
Yes.
Well, can't wait to read it. We'll talk tomorrow. Sir, a great, great pleasure meeting you. Till tomorrow.
Till tomorrow.
I didn't want to look at his idea in case I hated it.
Sir, forgive me. In my excitement, I forgot to give you this small token of a retainer. It's a token of good faith.
$10,000. Maybe we can do some more plays, after this.
Sir, you don't understand. I have no interest in producing plays. I'm only interested in producing this one. This is it. One play only.
Dear, I checked him out. He's legitimate. He has the money. So I'd say you've got a deal.
Audrey, his idea is terrible.
Then don't take it, darling.
How can I not take a deal like this? This is a definitional sweetheart deal. This is the deal of a lifetime.
Dear, what do you want me to do?
Advise me.
Take the deal.
Audrey, you don't understand. You haven't read this man's scenario. There is no way anyone can write a play based on this. You know why? Because the characters are completely cardboard and the plot preposterous.
Dear, listen. Calm down, brush your hair, make yourself presentable, and come in and show me this notorious scenario. I'm sure it's not half as bad as you think. Really, dear, you're still young. You've got a lovely wife, a lovely child. This is no time to panic.
I've used up the advance.
What?
I've used up the advance.
Darling, I'm sorry. I must have misheard you or misunderstood. I thought you got this advance last night.
I did.
Dear, it's 10:30 in the morning. What do you do up there in Connecticut?
Audrey, I used it to pay our mortgage. We owed 3 months. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. We're going through a tough time here.
Maybe you should go out to the coast.
I don't want to go to the coast. I'll start taking more drugs than I'm taking now.
Darling, you mustn't take drugs. They're bad for your health.
I'll see you this afternoon.
Dear, I'm afraid you may have to take this deal.
I'll see you this afternoon. Okay, I know exactly what you're thinking. What's the problem? You take the money, you write what you can, the play is no good, no one writes the play, you've got the money, basta, end of deal. If I could actually count on that, you're right, no problem. Here's the hitch. This guy's so rich, he's liable to produce this play no matter how bad it is. Why should this matter?
Miss West will see you now.
One second, I'll be right with her. People who write plays are a little crazy, okay? For one thing, no one writes plays to make money. I mean, you do, of course, but you don't go into it as a profession because that's where you figure the big bucks lie. You do it, and you spend your life doing it because it matters. And you have a kind of pact with yourself, and it says you don't mess around with what matters, or else it's gone.
Miss West will see you.
Yes, yes, coming.
Dear, if you want to get out of this deal, I'll loan you the money.
I can't do that.
Well, of course you can. Don't be a fool.
Look, here's the scenario. 4 pages. Actually, only 3. The first page is taken by the title.
What's the title?
The End of the World.
Oh, dear.
You know what it deals with?
I was afraid to ask.
Nuclear proliferation.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Is that an exciting subject or what?
Why does he want to do this play?
No idea.
Well, let's call him up. Get me Philip Stone. Stone called after you did. He'll agree to whatever terms you want.
The man is mad.
Well, that's no reason not to work with him. Yes?
Philip Stone on the line.
Philip Stone? Audrey West, I'm Michael Trent's agent. I gather you met with my client last night. Mr. Trent is sitting with me in my office. Say hello, dear.
Hello.
Hello.
Dear, we would like to know why you're so anxious to produce this particular play.
I want to produce it because I believe the Earth is doomed.
I'm sorry, what?
Doomed. The Earth is doomed.
He is mad. Mr. Stone, I'm sorry. Are you suggesting that a production of your play could prevent global doom?
Yes, yes, I think perhaps it would.
Ask him if he's planning on road companies.
Well, dear, I must say, this is certainly one of the worthiest projects I've come across in a very long time.
Possibly ever.
Yes, possibly ever. You've got to get out of this deal. Darling, are you still there?
Still here.
Well, how long would you say we have till doom strikes?
My statistics suggest it could be almost any time now.
So then you'll be anxious to get it on this season?
Yes, yes, I was hoping for this spring.
I've never heard of anything like this. I take it you've never produced before.
No, no.
Well, you have to be prepared for this play closing rapidly.
Why?
Well, I think there's a good chance audiences may not like it, just by definition. Frankly, unless I'm missing some essential element, it sounds rather downbeat to me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. If audiences don't like it, do I have to close the play?
Well, no, of course not.
Well, then I won't.
But what if no one comes?
No one at all?
It's been known to happen.
I find it hard to believe someone wouldn't come in eventually. Well, in the winter, for example, it's warm inside a theater. People are bound to come in. No, I'm going to keep this thing running. The Earth's future is at stake. One doesn't close the play when the Earth's future is at stake.
We have got to keep this man to ourselves. Dear, I think this is one of the most unusual and worthwhile projects I've ever come across. Hold on a second. What if he really knows something here?
What do you mean?
About the Earth, about its doom.
Oh, my God.
Dear, listen, why take a chance? Talk with the man. If a play of yours could prevent global doom, well...
Oh, my God!
If you like, my client will meet with you this afternoon.
I was, of course, an innocent, as I soon found out.
Put it mildly, sir, I'm thrilled by your stopping by. I feel hope rising in my breast. Some drinks? Scotch? I have it.
I told him I wanted nothing.
Good. All business for me then. Nothing either.
Stunner requested the meeting be at his place. Now I was in his apartment. If I'd ever wanted booze, this was it. But something warned me. I sensed a need for clear-headedness. The height had already made me dizzy enough. As a rule, I do dislike elevators. For some reason, I cannot rid my mind of what lies underneath as I ascend. Because of this, whenever possible, I walk upstairs. Stone lived in a penthouse 40 floors up. There is a limit to any neurosis. 40 floors was mine. Now the world was reeling. Looking down through the half-opened window to Stone's library, or from Stone's library, which I desperately did not want to do, but felt myself compelled to do, I saw people on the streets wobbling like rubber, like dolls made of rubber. The buildings were also like rubber, and in the hot sun, they seemed to be melting.
Extraordinary perspective from up here.
Yes.
What does an agent do? This is a question I'm asked all the time. In theory, an agent is supposed to find her client work. Now, while this has certainly been known to happen, fortunately for all concerned, we do much, much more. Now, take this instance, for example. Michael Trent had been my client now for nearly 15 years. What worried me about Michael was his growing eccentricity. He imagined himself as a kind of detective. Anyway, when this Stone project came along, though financially the deal was incredible, unprecedented, something just said to me, Audrey, watch out.
I don't know why. I suddenly felt quite dizzy.
Perhaps it was the open window. You know, in front of you is an open window, 40 exhilarating floors below, and down there's oblivion. Now, how can you as a normal being not just at least contemplate jumping out?
I didn't contemplate jumping out because I'm not in despair.
What's despair got to do with this?
I'd have thought everything.
I'm beginning to think you're some kind of ninny, Trent. Listen to me. We're on the verge of beating a dead horse here. I didn't expect you to jump out the window, all right. In fact, to be perfectly fair, I'd been astounded if you even stood on the ledge. The point is this, the urge to leap out of windows does not come from despair. It comes from curiosity.
Curiosity?
Yes, curiosity, rampant curiosity. I myself feel the urge all the time. Fortunately, I resist. Fortunate for me, fortunate for people down there. Enough, on the business. Your agent informs me you have certain reservations about my scenario. If you'd be so kind, I'd like to hear what these reservations are. Please speak freely.
Right. Thank you. Well, I would say offhand, the single biggest problem with your scenario is it's basically implausible.
No, it's supposed to be implausible.
I see. I didn't catch that.
Do you honestly think the next world war is going to start in some plausible way?
I see what you mean.
In fact, I think this basic implausibility is the most plausible thing in my scenario, and I worked very hard to achieve that.
Yes, well, you've succeeded.
So, when can I expect the script? You know, you understand I don't mean to rush you on this, but time is clearly the essence. I'm sure you can see why.
Doom, you mean?
Yes, sir, doom. Could be any moment now.
Look, Stone, I've got to tell you something. The truth is, I just don't see doom in your scenario. I mean, I see theatrical doom. It's written all over the place. But historic doom? Global doom? Can't seem to catch sight of it.
That's because it's not in.
Not in?
My scenario.
Well, don't you want to put it in?
No, sir.
Why?
Because if I put in everything I know, no one will believe me.
But no one will believe what you've got.
Trent, don't you understand? If I could just tell you how I know doom approaches, what's to stop me from telling everybody? You see, then I wouldn't need a play. I just wouldn't.
Stone, as I see it, there are only two possibilities here. Either you are certifiable or you're certifiable. In the first instance, you're certifiable because you've made all this up. In the second, you're certifiable because you haven't and you won't talk. To this, I have but two possible responses. Out the door and out the door. Farewell, farewell.
Hold it, Stone.
I suggest you sit down over here. This is no frivolous entertainment. My life is in jeopardy, and like it or not, so is yours. Now, when I'm done, if you still want to leave my employ, you may do so. Furthermore, you may keep the money I paid so far. How does that strike you? Is that fairness or not?
That seems very fair.
All right. So with your permission, I'll put this morbid instrument away.
Yeah, oh yeah, please.
I do find guns tend to have a will of their own. They're fascinating creatures, though. I call this particular gun Fred.
Fred? Well, that's a nice name for a gun.
Yes, it is. Yes. It's strong. Guns need a good, strong name. You can get all kinds of trouble if your gun doesn't have a good, strong name. Like Donald, for instance. That's a dreadful name for a gun.
Yeah, I can see that. Gun wouldn't respect you if you called it Donald.
Exactly. A gun like that could turn on you and kill you. In any moment. Now, did you ever have a gun?
No. Well, actually, once I had a BB gun.
Well, what did you call
it? Jim.
Jim, that's a good name for a gun.
You know, I wonder, would you mind very much if I asked my agent to come over here?
No, no need, sir. No need. No, we'll be through in a trice.
Good.
Next time, though. Next time. Now, on to doom. Gonna clear this whole thing up.
Good.
Tell me, sir, if you can, what these 10 countries have in common. India, Egypt, Iraq, Argentina, Israel, Japan, Korea, South Africa, Libya, and Brazil.
No idea.
Within 10 years, sir, each of these countries will possess the bomb.
Really?
No, sir.
And to you, that means we're doomed.
No, not in itself, but this is the clay from which our doom will be shaped, sculpted, formed.
You see doom as a work of art?
Yes, sir. Exactly. To me, this is part of its horror and its allure. Now, the reason I believe doom is approaching fast has to do with certain information that I stumbled upon by accident about a year ago. I can't tell you how, not now at least, this information at first blush is so incredible that were I to simply tell you what it is, you'd be bound not to believe it, just as I didn't believe it. And in some ways, I still do not. I cannot. Though I know full well all of it is true. You see my dilemma here. If I tell you what I know, you'll stay stone as mad and you'll leave. End the project, end the hope. On the other hand, if somehow you believe what I reveal, then I can only conclude that you are the one who's mad. So what do? The answer's obvious. What I've come to know on my own, you must somehow come to know on your own by proceeding systematically and following your nose.
My nose tells me I ought to get out of here. Why a play?
Why indeed? Because the theater, sir, alone among the arts, engages in equal measure the emotion and the intellect, and both must be touched here if we're going to survive.
Why me?
As I said, sir, I can't tell you that.
Why?
Because at this moment, sir, your greatest strength is your innocence.
Well, I just can't work like that. I'm sorry. Okay, I'll work on it all right. But only if you tell me exactly what it is about my plays that make you think I'm right for the job.
I can't tell you.
Stone, you're out of your mind.
Try a different. That's right. No, sir, what did I work?
Well, something's cuckoo here, and I think I'll leave before it's me.
Sorry, sir, I object. Sir, I'm still a desperate man, but I'm also a gambling man. I will gamble. I'll tell you this, we have met before.
Where?
I can't tell you that.
Stone, I can't take these games anymore. Now, if you want to shoot me, but that's it. I'm leaving.
Sir?
I don't recall meeting you, all right?
I'm aware.
So how important could this meeting have been?
To me, crucial.
When did this meeting take place?
I can't tell you that either.
I see. And yet, at this meeting, something happened which has convinced you I could save the world from doom.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Aren't you a bit surprised I don't remember?
No, sir. I thought you'd blot this out.
Blot it out?
Yes, sir.
If the incident was anything like this, of course I'd blotted it out. People must be blotting you out from their lives all the time. I'm leaving.
Look, this particular incident convinced me that you, sir, had a thorough understanding of evil.
I?
Yes, sir, you. Now it's my turn to leave. I hope you take this job. Good day.
I had, of course, no idea what he meant. I would say I took the job because of two factors. One, of course, was the money. How could I turn down a deal like that? And the other, it's curiosity. To be precise, 10 months, 5 days, 12 weeks, 12 hours, and 23 minutes have passed now since Philip Stone came into my life, wielding a 4-page scenario of dubious merit. Frankly, I still have no idea what he meant when he said I understood evil. As far as I know, I'm a pussycat. I know it isn't Stella. Stella has a key. She came down on a 6 o'clock shuttle. About an hour ago, I sent her across the street to case the lobby of a 2-bit flea bag called the Sunset Motel, where I'm supposed to meet a man who claims he can clear up everything, a man who calls himself the Shadow. Really, I'm not kidding. That's what the message said. Is Stone behind all this? If so, I've been set up. Why?
Mr. Trent?
Yeah.
Mr. Trent, apparently you have not understood the conditions of this meeting. The man you were about to see is privy to such sensitive information that merely talking to you places into jeopardy not only his position in the government, but his life. For this reason, you were specifically told to come alone. You have not. Obviously, our meeting place must now be changed. One more violation and the meeting will be on. We'll come back for you when we're ready. Your secretary has been sent back to New York.
Poor Stella. She hates flying, too. I'll tell you, this whole thing, it's not been easy on her, right from the start.
Mike's instructions were simple. He said, Dollface, I want you to get me every book and every article published in this last year that deals with nuclear weapons. Wow, I thought. Within a week, his desktop looked like the Adirondacks.
That's when the trouble began.
About a month after Michael had started his research, Stella gave me a call at home. She asked if she could come by. She said it was urgent. I told her to come right over. And he's been working?
Round the clock.
So what's the problem, dear?
Well, it's his moaning.
Moaning?
Actually, I was not aware I was making that dreadful noise. I thought I was just reading quietly to myself. I did hear the noise, and I thought it came from next door. I was, in fact, about to complain to the landlord, telling him it was hurting my concentration.
Well, this is not right, dear. Not right at all. I'll call him in the morning.
Which she did. Gave me a real chewing out.
I told him that in my book, professionals, real professionals, do not sit there moaning. They knuckle down and do their job. No one has asked him to be a writer. Now, what exactly is the problem?
I told her not to worry. I have been finding things I did not expect.
Dear, that is what research is about.
I can't read this stuff anymore. I don't want to read about this stuff anymore.
The prompt and delayed effects of thermonuclear explosions is not what I wish to read at night. I'm scaring my family. My son runs from me in horror when he sees me coming. You know why? Because I have become a sentimental dish rag. I see him walking towards me and I start to weep. I see him playing on the lawn with his dogs and I start to weep. I don't want to have to think about this stuff every day. What sort of people can think about this stuff every day? I'll work on it.
What?
I know what to do. I'll work on it. I can work on it. I know what to do. Through Stone, I'd arranged to meet with some people who think about this stuff every day. The ones I asked to meet held opinions that seemed to me to go against all common sense. Anyhow, it was a way in. When there's a mystery, there's at least the possibility of a play. Whatever it was all I had to go on. Stone said he thought I was doing the right thing. I will call him General Wilmer. He was one of the president's chief advisors on nuclear policy. He had a PhD in physics. His house was in Virginia, about an hour's drive from Washington. Usually he worked at the Pentagon, but this was Saturday afternoon, a lovely autumn day.
So, you want to make a play out of this?
Well, that's what I'm hoping.
Some kind of a strange love affair?
No, I wouldn't think so.
Good. Because the strange love scenario only works if you postulate a doomsday weapon. And no one wants to contemplate that. To save ourselves by threatening to annihilate ourselves is surely the height of preposterousness.
I would think so, yes.
So, have you got a plot?
Well, no, I'm afraid I don't.
Don't plays need plots?
Well, I'm hoping to find one. That's one of the reasons I've come down to Washington.
Not plot in the sense of a conspiracy, I trust.
No. Plot in the sense of narrative thrust. The thing that makes you want to ask what happens next. That kind of thing. So how long have you known Philip Stone?
I've never met the man.
Well, how did he arrange this meeting?
Someone else set it up. So you don't understand why we need nuclear weapons?
Right, that's probably because I'm new at this.
No, not at all. A lot of my colleagues don't understand, and they've been working on this stuff for years. It's tricky. You have to dig down to find a sense in this. It's there. I gave a talk last month at Princeton, and it was on this very issue. And a number of the students started shouting, "Why don't we just stop this madness?" And I said, "You know, it's easy to avoid nuclear war." The place went quiet. stunned silence. I said, all you have to do is surrender. Problem is to find a way to avoid nuclear war while preserving the values that we all cherish. Okay? Don't we have enough to accomplish this right now? Of course we do, right now. But we don't need to deter the Russians now. Why would they attack? They'd gain nothing. Deterrence comes into play during crisis. During crisis, fear takes over. Fear makes people think in peculiar ways. A successful deterrent says to the Russians, no matter what you do, your best case nuclear scenario is just no good.
But that's where we are now.
Of course. And if you knew we were going to stay where we are, there'd be no problem. But we won't stay where we are. The system's dynamic, change is built in, and things may turn better for us, or for them. That's because any imbalance at all is dangerous, even if the imbalance is only imagined. In this business, it's how you're perceived that counts. For example, let's say things turn better for us. Might as well be optimistic here. Immediately, the Soviets get jumpy and start thinking, maybe we'd better hit these guys before they get even stronger. We get jumpy because we know what they're thinking. Mostly because it's what we'd be thinking if we were them. So, by and by we start thinking that maybe we'd better do what they think we're going to do, even though we don't want to. Because otherwise, they will. In which case, we're done for. So we do. Dangerous. Okay, why does this occur? It occurs because of one fundamental truth, and it governs every aspect of nuclear strategy. The guy who goes first goes best.
You want more so you can go first?
In a crisis, absolutely.
Well, that's encouraging news.
Well, what's the alternative? We say we'd never, under any circumstances, go first. And the Russians actually believe us. So they go first.
Why would they go first if they believe us? You just said they go first because they're afraid of us.
Either way? Well, you certainly can't expect them to believe us completely.
So it doesn't matter what we say.
In a way, that's true.
Maybe we should back up a bit. I think I may have started at too high a level. Why do we need nuclear weapons in the first place?
To prevent their use.
Good, just what I thought. Yet, if we suddenly realize we can't prevent their use, we'd better hurry up and use them.
Right.
Isn't there some kind of basic contradiction there?
Absolutely. It's what makes the problem so difficult to solve.
Do you enjoy this job?
Someone's got to do it. Yes? Yes. The turtle's in Zurich. Zurich. What's it doing in Zurich? Oh, no. No, don't feed it. Not till we find out what it's doing there. Thank you.
So, the turtle's in Zurich. Well, I'm glad the turtle's in Zurich.
So, where were we? Oh, yes. Preventing nuclear war. I'm sorry, am I depressing you?
No, happy as can be.
Okay, in order to prevent a nuclear war, what's the first thing we have to do?
From my end, get a drink.
No. The first thing we have to do is let the other side know we're able to fight a nuclear war, and at all levels too, even though they're probably unwinnable and unfightable. Well, if we can't use your nuclear weapons, what good are they,
Right, very sensible, except I just heard you suggest they were useless.
Probably useless.
I see.
If you want them to fight with or win with,
What else is there?
Oh, lots.
Besides bluffing.
Well, what's wrong with bluffing?
Everything.
Only if the other side knows you're bluffing.
But you just said it's bluffing.
Nah, that was off the record.
That sure puts a lot of pressure on this interview.
Not really. Who's to say I've been lying? Who's to say I've not been lying?
I see what you mean.
Of course I'm not.
But then again, you might.
Right. Who can say that for sure? What we're talking about, you see, is credibility, which is a function of perception. This means that for the purpose of deterrence, what your opponent thinks you will do is far more important than what you actually will do. To this end, a bluff taken seriously is infinitely better than a serious threat taken as a bluff. I'm sorry, not now. For example, for the purpose of deterrence, it's a good idea to tell the Russians that if they move into Western Europe, we will use nuclear weapons to stop their advance. No ambiguity there. You make this move, we make that move. However, should deterrence fail, it would seem wiser not to use our nuclear weapons at all. The reason being that once we've gone nuclear, the Soviet nuclear retaliation is overwhelming. What's more, the probability is that it would escalate. What this means is that instead of Western Europe being overrun by the Soviets, a thing we certainly don't want, Western Europe and the United States and the Soviet Union would quickly and effectively cease to exist. In fact, according to our latest projections, so probably would the entire world. Okay. So, here we are with two policies. One overt, you move here and we will strike. And the second, covert. We know it makes no sense for us to strike with nuclear weapons if they move in. Nonetheless, are deterred from moving in because it's just possible we might be crazy enough to do it. This is why it's so important for our president, whoever he is, to every so often say something that sounds a bit insane.
So, that's what's been going on.
Absolutely. If we seem too sensible about all this, they'd know we'd never use these bloody things. And there goes the deterrent.
So it's not rational to be rational?
Exactly. If you're rational, you're finished. Oh, that's crazy.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate all this.
Fear, you see. Fear, that's the great deterrent. Mustn't do too much to reduce fear. Oh, by the way, that's the problem with a nuclear freeze. To the extent that it makes people feel safer, it actually raises the chance of war.
Just when I thought I'd had it. Fear prevents war?
Right!
I thought before you said it starts it.
Both!
Fear is what starts war?
That's correct.
And prevents it?
That's correct!
Just thought I'd repeat to make sure I had it right.
No, no. You've got it right.
Funny. Before I came down here, I actually thought that thinking about this stuff day in, day out would be, you know, gloomy. Painful. I bet you can't wait to get to work in the morning.
Oh, well, beats thinking about tanks.
This has been so helpful.
Well, because you have an open mind. One must open one's mind to stuff like this. So many people are all closed off. Because they think mankind may be doomed, they go around in despair. I'll tell you something. I think things are going just fine and you should relax. We really do know what we're doing. Take a look. In the past 40 years, have we had a nuclear war? No. Why? Nuclear weapons. The fact is, nuclear weapons not only prevent nuclear war, they prevent all war. And I think that just may be the best damn thing that ever happened to us. Really do.
The conversation with General Wilmer had left me in a quandary. I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry.
I've been thinking. Maybe you should meet a woman named Sylvia Berner. If you like, I can set it up.
I'd come across Berner's name before in my research. She was a Russian scholar connected to Georgetown University and a real hardliner, especially where the Soviet Union was concerned. We met at the campus during a break between classes. Things got off to a surprising start.
No, I agree with you completely. Our present nuclear policy does not make sense. Not at all.
Why had the general sent me to this woman?
What we must do is very simple. We must stop regarding nuclear war as some kind of an inevitable Holocaust and start looking at it as a war.
What?
We have to learn how to wage nuclear war rationally.
What?
Rationally. We have got to learn how to wage nuclear war rationally. You see, even though a strong case can be made for the fact that nuclear war is essentially an act of insane desperation and therefore fundamentally irrational, that doesn't mean that once we're into it, you shouldn't do the thing right.
This would seem to suggest that you think it's possible to win a nuclear war?
Oh, no. A limited nuclear war, but you can't win an all-out and side decides not to hit back. But one could never really count on that. Now, do I really know how to fight a limited nuclear war? Not at all. No one does. No one's ever fought one. And yet, if we're not prepared, we're in the soup. Okay, what do I propose? I propose that we send a clear message to the Russians. And this message says, you mess around with us and we're gonna mess around with you. This is the sort of talk that Russians understand. Okay, how do we do this? First, we build the MX, the Trident II, the Pershing II, and the Cruise. Why do I want these things? Because they have the ability to take out hardened targets. If we get into a major crisis with these people, I want the ability to disarm them to the greatest extent possible.
Disarm?
Remove. Surgically remove as much of their military capacity as is possible.
That's called a first strike, I believe.
Oh, no.
It's not?
No.
Why?
Well, because the connotation is aggressive. This is a defensive act.
I see. Out of curiosity, what do you call it?
Anticipatory retaliation.
Ah.
Some prefer preemptive strike, but that can get cumbersome. Because if you sense they're about to preempt you, you have to preempt them.
And by the same token, if the other side should somehow learn that you've discovered their plan to preempt and are therefore about to preempt them, they'd have no recourse but to start discussing a preemptive strike against you. And one can obviously just get lost in this kind of dog.
That's right. Anticipatory retaliation simply covers everything. Now, what would a credible nuclear war fighting policy be?
Got me.
In a war, what do you think the Russian command would least like to lose?
I would say offhand, Russia?
Short of that.
Half of Russia.
Short of that.
A third of Russia?
Wrong approach. The point is to avoid killing civilians needlessly. Now, come on, think. In a war outside of its population, what can the Soviet leaders least afford to lose?
I don't know.
Themselves.
Themselves?
Of course. With without a Kremlin, without a leadership, you know what the Russians have got? They've got diddly. That's what they got.
So how do we get rid of their leaders?
Well, we know where they are, and we bomb them.
Surely they're not going to just sit there and wait.
No, they're going to hide. That's expected.
I would think Russia has a lot of hiding places.
Of course, and we know where they are, and we bomb them.
Sounds to me like you're about to wipe out all of Russia.
That's certainly not what we intend.
I see, it's just a side effect, you mean.
Correct.
And wouldn't this irritate them?
Irritate who?
The Russians who are left. Oh, I see. They're all gone.
That's right. Forgive me. I have a class to teach.
I could barely contain my excitement. I called Stone at the first payphone I could find. There are times when you want to just chuck it all. This wasn't one of them. I was on to something here. No question. I decided to check out these guys they call war gamers. The guys who played with these war scenarios. I called General Wilmer and asked if he could arrange it. Things had gone so well with the last meeting he set up. He said he would, gladly, and he did. I'll call them Jim and Pete. Both were connected with the Harley Corporation, a government think tank in nearby Virginia, but the place was off limits to plain old folk like me, so they very graciously invited me to Jim's house. No, perhaps it was Pete's. I was never altogether sure. One of theirs. For a meal in my honor. Why they had gone to all this trouble for me? Something was very odd.
So, you talked with Sylvia Barrent.
Bet that was fun.
She poked a lot of holes in our deterrent.
Plus, I'm sure she did. It's not hard to do.
There's a curious paradox built into deterrent strategy, and no one has a clue on how to get around it. The paradox is this. Deterrence is dependent upon strength. Well, that's obvious. The stronger your nuclear arsenal, the more the other side's deter. However, should deterrence fail for any reason, your strength instantly becomes your greatest liability, inviting attack instead of preventing it.
Hoist on your own petard.
And that is where all these crazy scenarios come in which war breaks out precisely because no one wants it to, really. I'm not kidding. The business is filled with paradox. Here, I'll run one by.
I think, before you do, we should point out it isn't easy starting a nuclear war.
Right, sorry, getting carried away.
In fact, we can run scenario after scenario. The Persian Gulf is the hot spot, most popular.
People just will not go nuclear.
Right, and at first it absolutely drove us up the wall. Here we had all these tests designed to see what happens when people go nuclear.
And no one would do it.
To the man. They just refused to believe that there wasn't some other way to resolve the crisis.
Well, the military started freaking out.
They figure all those guys down in the silos, maybe they won't push the button.
Real freakout scene.
The whole Pentagon.
They just went bananas. Total banana scene.
Some general called me up. He said, "You incompetent jackass. What the hell kind of scenario are you giving these guys?" I said, "We're giving them every scenario we can think of, sir. No one will push the button, sir." You know what he said?
Get this. Don't tell him it's the button.
Really, we said. Then what good's the test?
Anyway, happy ending.
Finally, we solved it.
You solved it?
I solved it, you solved it. What's it matter? We solved the thing.
What a bitch.
People think it's easy starting a nuclear war.
Hey, let them try.
Okay, I'll bite. How do you start a nuclear war?
Well, first, you have to assume that a nuclear war is the last thing either side wants.
Right, that's the key. Who would have thought of it? Jim.
Okay. Let's say we're in a confrontation situation where we and the Soviets are facing down in the Middle East. Let's say Iraq. Big Soviet pour down. Let's further say we're losing conventionally on the ground.
Not hard to believe.
And the panicked president decides he wants the option of using nuclear weapons in the area, so he moves them in.
You mind? He doesn't want to use them now.
Right, absolutely not. Last thing he wants.
He's just hoping by showing strength, the Soviets really will rethink their position and pull back.
In other words, it's a bluff.
Right. Good old poker bluff.
And by the way, probably the proper move to make.
Okay, so far, the president's batting 1,000. No appeasement here. Yet, not too strong. Nothing precipitous.
Now, let's suppose the Soviets, in the heat of this crisis, misinterpret the moves we made and believe that, in fact, we're about to launch these weapons. Not a far-fetched supposition.
Particularly, given their tendency to paranoia.
Right.
Okay, now at this point, the issue for them is not do they want to be in a war.
They're already in a war in the Middle East.
Right. The issue isn't even do they want to launch a nuclear attack against the West.
That's because they know they'll have to if the West attacks them.
You see?
The only issue...
Absolutely only issue...
...is do they want to go first and preempt this attack...
Or wait it out.
...and go second.
Now they recognize...
Just as much as we that going first...
...is going best.
Right.
And by a shocking margin, too, no scenario ever shows anything else. I mean, these notions of us riding out a nuclear attack and then launching again without substantial loss of capability, well, it's nonsense.
By the way, you have to posit here that events are moving rapidly. A short time frame is crucial to this scenario. No time to sit back and say, hey, wait, why would he want to shoot at me? I know he's in trouble, but he isn't crazy. No, he doesn't have time to think things out. He's got to make a move. Okay, what's he do? He shoots. Now, are we saying it's a likely thing? No. But from the Soviet perspective, they have to shoot. Under these conditions, holding back is clearly wrong, politically and militarily.
And that
is how a nuclear war begins.
Not out of anger or greed.
But fear.
Fear that the other guy is going to do it first.
So they better hurry up and do it quick.
Before he does.
Hoist on your own petard. By the way, where is the petard?
Petard?
Petard.
Ah, yes.
You guys are a scream.
Actually, should we tell him?
Sure.
Actually, over the center, we all try to scream at least once a day.
Usually it happens in the cafeteria.
Someone on the staff will stand up and shout, "Scream in time!" And everyone just, you know,
It's a ritual we only do when no one from the Pentagon's room.
We did it once when some honcho military brats were there.
Freaked them out.
Within minutes, we had lost I don't know how many grants.
So anyway, now we're pretty choosy about who we scream in front of.
I'll tell you, I sometimes think if it really happens, we all, you know... And by the way, the whole thing could be over. No matter what anyone says, no one knows what happens to the ozone layer in a nuclear war. Really, no idea. Okay, so I sometimes think now it's all over, and we're all up there in the big debriefing space in the sky. And the good Lord decides to hold a symposium because he's curious. How did this thing happen? And everybody says, hey, don't look at me. I didn't want to do it. The end result being that everyone realizes no one wanted to do it, but there was suddenly no choice, or no choice they could see, and the symposium gets nowhere.
How do we get out of this?
Well, you try like hell not to get into these kinds of conflicts.
Obviously, sometimes it can't be helped.
This is not pleasant news.
On the other hand, let's not exaggerate. Things are not that bad. Maybe we shouldn't get out of it. Would you not love to have a snapshot of this man's expression? Look, it's not like the civil rights issue. I mean, there's no gross injustice here. What do you protest against? Paradox?
You understand, this doesn't mean these things are good.
Still, they have kept us out of World War III.
So this devil...
It just may have a little angel in it, too.
Gives you pause.
Have you set the timer?
Oh, thanks.
So you mean we're supposed to just sit around, twiddle our thumbs, and wait?
Well...
Sometimes, there's really not an awful lot you can do.
Except hold on.
And hope for some kind of discontinuity.
Right.
Ah, discontinuity. What the hell is that?
It's an event. By definition, unpredictable, which causes a sudden and radical shift in the general mode of thinking.
Sadat's going to Jerusalem is the prime example.
Sadat looked down the road and saw nuclear weapons in Cairo and Alexandria in maybe 5-10 years. He just didn't like what he saw.
So he decided he was going to do something about it.
And what he decided to do, no one, anticipated.
And it changed the whole ballgame.
Just like that.
And that
is discontinuity.
Okay, all right. Any takers?
Well, I'd say the best one we've come up so far is...
extraterrestrial?
You mean, like, E.T. comes down?
You got it.
Jesus Christ,
that's another.
You guys are a riot.
Hey, in this business, important to keep smiling.
No, I can see that. Listen, have you guys given any real thoughts, you know, to touring the country, nightclubs, things like that?
Oh, sure, it's occurred to us.
I'm sure it has.
People are very interested in this nuclear issue.
I went right in the dirty heart of it.
Good. Listen, while we're on the subject of humor, what's your attitude towards doom?
Doom?
It's just no solution.
No. No solution.
I'm being serious.
So are we.
Okay. Even with my lousy sinuses, I could tell something wasn't smelling right. I figured it was my fault. What have I missed? I decided to retrace my steps. The next day, I was back in my office in Stamford, going through my notes, when Stella came in with a rather large package.
Boy, is this big!
Hey, dollface, what gives?
I don't know. I found it in the hallway. Somebody left it outside your door. I had to bring it in because I couldn't get it out.
It has no return address.
Hey, Mike, how do you build a box like that?
I don't know.
Hey, maybe there's instructions in the back. Mikey, look, a card.
The card said, if you want help with your quest, be in Washington tomorrow night, 10 o'clock. And it was signed, The Shadow. It's open.
We found another place to meet.
Right. I'm led down the back stairs to a car, an old Ford wagon. In the rear seat are two men. I get in. No one says a word to me, and the car pulls out. Fog moves in off the Potomac. We are heading towards the center of the capital, that much I can tell. We move at a crawl. Even the road is scarcely visible. And then the sky begins to glow, a dazzling, milky phosphorescence. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And then I hear music, band music. And then I see the source of this strange light. We approach the Jefferson Memorial. On the ground surrounding it are rows upon rows of giant plague lights. The lawn, what I can see of it, is packed. Obviously, it's a concert of some sort. We pass near a clearing in the fog, and I see that in the crowd are many men in military uniform. The car stops, and I see a sign. Can't quite make out what it says. The people who have brought me here tell me to get out. But how will I recognize the shadow, I say. Don't worry, they say. But where should I walk? Wherever you wish. So I get out and the car drives off. I head for the sign. The sign says, U.S. Military Corps, U.S. Marine Corps Band. Well, I don't like crowds in the best of times. And this is terrible. So I decided to go towards the memorial, which looms through the fog like a spectral white mushroom. The rotunda is empty. I look down through the fog and can see almost no one. And then I hear,
Mr. Trent.
And I recognize the voice.
Mr. Trent, please, can we talk?
Proceeded systematically. I followed my nose and I found the piece of the puzzle I was looking for. Unfortunately, instead of the puzzle being solved, the puzzle has expanded. I am the man who knows too much and not enough. Why me? Why has Stone picked me? By the way, this is my house in Connecticut, my beloved retreat to which I have retreated. Fat chance. About an hour ago, Stone called to say he was coming out to see how I'm doing. How I'm doing. All right, the truth. I've told him the meeting with the Shadow was canceled. Actually, I didn't have the nerve to tell him this directly. I left a message. I've told the same thing to my agent and my wife. I need time to think things through. It's not an easy racket writing plays. Stay out of it.
Dad!
That's my son. He's 11.
I think your producer's here.
Great. Here it goes.
Should I tell Mom to let him in?
No. Let him find his own way in. My wife is on the patio on a chase reading Yeats. That's what life's like here in the country. Now, if things go well today, and at this point I have no idea just how that's possible, you won't be meeting either my wife or my son. As I said earlier, I don't want them involved in this.
Trent?
The call of the wild. I'm on the patio, Phil. What you are about to see is scrambling of the highest order. Phil, well, glad to see you're happy.
I haven't seen you in a long time.
That's right.
Why was that meeting canceled?
Oh, with the Shadow? I don't know, they didn't say. Security, I suspect. I'm waiting now to see when it will be rescheduled.
And yet for some reason they neglected to tell you why it was canceled?
No, security. I mean, they, you know, said that. Said, too risky for him to meet you with you tonight. That's what they said.
I was not aware you were joining us today.
No, nor was my client. Dear, I need to speak to you alone.
Of course.
Mr. Stone, would you mind very much if my client and I had a moment to...
Oh, of course, dear lady. You stay here. I can use the time to look around the house. I love country houses, and this is a very charming one.
Well, he's the weirdest man I've ever met.
Dear, I'm afraid I have some very bad news for you.
Oh.
Could I have a drink? Martini.
With an olive?
No, dear, lemon twist.
Right, of course. So, what's the bad news?
Well, it seems, dear, that your producer has instituted legal action against you.
What?
He's suing you, dear. Bringing suit against you for fraud and breach of contract.
What?
Shh, dear, please.
Why?
I'm not sure.
Well, how much is he suing me? I mean, is it for the retainer, the advance?
I'm afraid it's for a bit more than that, dear.
How can it be for more? That's all I made.
The suit is for $15
million. $15 million?
Yes, dear, dollars.
But... that makes no sense.
I know.
Maybe it's not dollars. Maybe it's zlotus.
No, dear. Dollars. Yankee dollars.
What's he think I've got?
Well, we've got this house.
Oh, my God.
Perhaps if you turned in your script.
Oh, come on, Audrey. No one sues a playwright for $15 million because he's a few weeks late delivering a script. I mean, what's he hoped to gain? A house? He doesn't need another house.
It's not the house that interests me. It's your ruination. And I expect your legal fees alone should accomplish that. You look surprised, and that surprises me. Do you think I'd allow your treachery to go unchallenged?
What are you talking about?
Sir, the time for innocence has passed.
What treachery?
Evidence suggests, madam, that your client has, in fact, found what he set out to find.
That's not true.
Michael, have you lied to Mr. Stone?
Not at all.
You owe my client an apology.
Tell this lady what you've done.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Does the name The Shadow ring a bell?
The meeting was called off.
That, sir, is a lie.
Mr. Stone, forgive me. If my client says the meeting was called off, the meeting was called off.
I disagree.
Michael?
It was called off.
The matter is closed.
This man's violated the terms of our agreement.
Mr. Stone.
Audrey?
Dear, let me handle this. I believe the time has come, sir, for you to leave.
Tell her what you've done.
Is there something wrong, sir, with your ears?
Audrey.
I said stay out of this. I can handle this. Mr. Stone, if my client says the meeting was called off, it was called off. My clients do not lie to me.
Audrey, please.
Dear, stay out of this. The matter is therefore closed. Except, sir, for your appalling lack of manners. Where, may I ask, were you brought up?
I lied. I'm sorry. Oh.
Would you be so kind, sir?
A drink?
Yes, please. Some water would be nice, I think. Why don't you trust me?
Of course I trust you. This has nothing to do with trust. I just had no idea what to say. I haven't even told Anne. I told no one.
I owe you an apology, sir.
Not at all.
I don't understand what's happening.
Did you set the meeting up? Then how do you know it happened?
I had you followed ever since you accepted this job.
Great.
I should add, in all this time, my emissaries have never seen you writing.
What do you think, I write in the street? I write in my office.
Good, then you can show me some pages.
Pages?
Yeah, Sir Doom approaches. I need pages.
Anyone can write pages.
I ask only to see yours.
Well, I never show pages till I'm done. Audrey can confirm this.
Audrey, are you all right?
Anyhow, the important thing isn't pages. The important thing is concept. Concept is what we should be talking about. Without a concept, a play is nothing.
A play may be nothing without a concept. Without pages, it's even less.
Who said that? Aristotle, I believe.
Dear, this man is suing you.
Okay, fine. You want pages? I'll give you pages. I've got pages over here. Here, pages. Here, pages everywhere. You want pages? Here, pages.
Yeah, those aren't pages from a play.
Right. For that, you need a concept.
Michael.
I'm okay. I know what I'm doing, really. Now, do you want to hear what my concept is? Because I will tell you, gladly, because this concept I am wild about. And it took a long time finding. In fact, I found it only today. But well worth the waiting, because this concept means the play will be fun.
What?
Fun! Fun to write, fun to look at.
Dear, are we talking about the same play?
Of course! The play that deals with Doom. Going to be fun. So, you want to hear what this concept is? Okay, here it is. The playwright is conceived as being very much like a detective. What do you think?
What playwright?
The playwright who's at the center of this play.
What's a playwright doing in this play?
He's in this play because he's the only reality I can hang on to here. And this playwright is sent on a strange mission by a man, I would say, quite like you. A kindly man. A man who would surely never, for example, sue anyone. And this playwright respects this man because this playwright is without doubt the very salt of the earth. Though possibly with some knowledge of evil. I still haven't figured that one out. I may have to come back to the youth on that. I'm nowhere on that so far, that's the truth. I just can't remember where we met. Okay, so this playwright, down he goes to Washington figuring, if this mystery can be solved anywhere, here's the spot.
Dear, what happened down in Washington?
The case took a turn for the worse, all right?
I didn't think it was possible.
Michael, please.
I do not believe what I heard the shadow, what the shadow told me today.
Why?
Because I don't want to. So I start. I tell him, I think the notion of using nuclear weapons to prevent the use of nuclear weapons, which is the system we currently depend on, simply doesn't work. Not in the long run. Too many places where the system just plain breaks down. Breakdown, in fact, I say, seems built in. What we've got, I say, is a fail-safe, built-in breakdown machine. He says, so how can I help? And I say, well, for openers, you can tell me where I've gone wrong. And he says, get ready for this, zinger number one. You're not wrong, you've got it. I would think my expression probably looked a bit like hers. I said, wait, hold on, you're telling me the system doesn't work? He says, why are you acting so surprised? That's what you just told me. I say, well, sure, but I didn't think I was right. He says, well, you are. I say, well, then how come you and I are the only two who know it? You know his response? Hold on to your seat, folks. He said, actually, everybody knew. It was common knowledge.
Dear, that makes no sense.
That's right. Of course it makes no sense. But why does it make no sense?
Well, because if everyone knows what they're working on doesn't work.
Yes.
Why would they keep on working?
Exactly.
I assume these are people who can find other jobs.
Dad, can I ask you a question?
No, and stay out of here. Go to your room. All right. So, I ask what you ask. If they know it doesn't work, why do they keep working? Because they don't believe what they know. Look, they know it doesn't work, okay? I mean, they've run charts, the projections. Intellectually, they're fine, they understand. But they just can't believe it. Why? Because it seems to work. It's worked so far, right? So why not forever? You see, logic, worst thing that's ever happened to man. Oh my God.
What?
Down in Washington, where I went to interview all these guys, there was something on their walls. I mean, each one had it. And I remember thinking, I wonder if these guys belong to some kind of club. Anyway, I didn't give it too much thought. Other guys, they put up posters of Bo Derek. These guys, they had Escher prints. The shadow. Let me show you how he got in touch with me. Box. Aren't playwright houses wonderful? Look, you see, it doesn't work, and yet it does. It's not possible, and yet it is.
How does one construct an object like that?
Not quite sure.
I love one in my office. Reminds me somehow of the theater.
Here's the Escher print they all had on their walls. Print.
Well, there's something very wrong with this. And yet, it looks all right, but it's not. You see the water? I mean, how do they get water to flow like this? They had it on their walls. But I bet they knew there was something wrong with it. And they couldn't figure it out either.
Off.
Dear. Thank you. Thank you, dear. Could you maybe...
Not at all. I understand. It's what I've been going through. Anyway, what he said so far, that the system didn't work, not in the long run, that I could accept. And why not? It was the very conclusion I had come to. My real problem came when he said everyone else had come to this conclusion too. They just didn't believe it. I said, come on, surely you believe what you know. Surely not everyone's like that. Absolutely, he said, grinning like a Cheshire cat. Well, Then why are you still working on it? And he grinned even more and said softly, just like this, guess. Well, I was stumped. So I went back to the very first question I'd asked him when I met him the first time. Why do we need more weapons? Especially if we know the system doesn't work. His answer has remained the same. So we can strike first.
What?
It's a defensive act.
Hitting someone first is a defensive act?
You know, he's planning to hit you.
Why would he be planning to hit you?
Because he thinks you're planning to hit him.
Well, he's right.
There you are.
Dear, by this scheme, no one does anything offensive.
Exactly. Every act of aggression is defensive here. It's a completely moral system.
Well, something's wrong with it.
I know.
I'm not quite sure what.
It's a puzzle. So I said to him, this is crazy. This is suicidal. If we strike first, they'll just retaliate and wipe us out in return.
That's what's wrong with it.
That's just one of them.
With one like that, you don't need any more.
Exactly, and he agreed.
What?
That's why we've abandoned deterrence.
What?
Exactly, what? I mean, even if deterrence doesn't work, it works a bit. You don't just chuck it out, not without a substitute. He held up his hand. Not a substitute, he said. An improvement. And he smiled shyly, slyly, eyes glistening with delight, and said, it seems, at least in theory, that a better mousetrap has been designed. Look, he said, an attack by us right now is unthinkable because we know the enemy would retaliate and wipe us out in return. However, what if we could somehow prevent retaliation? Ah, that's a different ballgame altogether. Well, in the future, we think it may be possible, technologically, to do just that. And if we can, even for the briefest time, a week, a month, create some kind of invulnerable window shade allowing our missiles out but nothing in, we can, in that brief time, take care of things.
I don't believe it.
Why?
It's barbaric.
Well, because even if we aren't, they've got to be, just in case we are, which means they are, which means we have to. You see, defensive. Again, a completely moral system. This is fun. But here's the best part, here's the twist. Even if this thing works perfectly, it still doesn't work. Watch. Let's imagine that this amazing, invulnerable window shade has just been built. Advanced tests prove it does absolutely everything it's supposed to, and furthermore, Sears has it. Hey, terrific! So we call up and order one. 2 weeks for delivery, they say. Well, that's not bad, 2 weeks. So now we say, send it on. Problem. Surely the Soviets know someone who works for Sears. Psst, guess what those Amerikanskis have just ordered. Well, the Soviets know what's in store for them if we install this thing. Same thing that would be in store for us if they installed this thing. So what do? They call Sears. Hello? This is the Kremlin. We would like to order very quickly, overnight if possible, a set of your amazing magic invulnerable curtains. Right, says Sears, a fine product. Unfortunately, it's a specialty item. And the fastest we can possibly get it to you from now is 6 weeks. 6 weeks from now, are you crazy? In 6 weeks, we won't exist. Slam! Now what do? They break out the vodka, sit back and decide to preempt. Because what else can they do? If they're responsible citizens, nothing. The rules of the game mandate it. That's how the game is played. But for them, too late. Because it turns out, at the very instant we place our order, some smart hotshot on our side realizes to his and our chagrin that the Soviets are bound to discover what we've ordered and will have to assume the worst. Even if our intentions, for argument's sake, are benign, what else can they assume? What else would we assume? Which means they must preempt, even if they don't want to. Which means it doesn't matter that this amazing window shade actually works. We'll never get it in.
Okay, so what do? We call up Sears. Quick, cancel the order. Great, says Sears. Now we can send it to the Soviets. Oh my God, now what? What else? We preempt the Soviets' presumed preemption by pre-preempting them. Right back to where we started. You cannot beat the system. Not even when it seems you can, because it just turns right back on you. It's a closed loop. It's that Escher brain. Right, he said, and I could see his eyes. They were on fire. I mean, this man was excited. I thought, am I dreaming this? This makes no sense. This man has risked his life to tell me all of this, and he's excited. And suddenly, he grabbed my hands. He's clutching them. And he brings me towards him. And then his head, with still gleaming eyes, is next to mine. Stop me, he says. And an instant later, he's gone, in the fog by the bandstand.
Dear, there's something very wrong here. Something you have missed, I think. I couldn't say, of course, just what. I'm not an expert, dear, but clearly somewhere in your research you've gone wrong. That's just obvious because this makes no sense, as you yourself have just pointed out. I mean, the world you are describing, dear, this is not a world I know. Furthermore, it's not a world I care to know. That's the truth, dear. I don't want to know any more. I think perhaps a stroll across the field. It's such a lovely day. Shame not to take advantage of it. Keep with it, dear.
Is this what you mean by doom?
Not quite.
Look, Stone, I am stumped, all right? I'm at the end. What the hell was the shadow up to? And why had you picked me for this?
Have you ever been to the South Pacific?
No.
Remarkable place. Beauty beyond imagination. The imagination belittles its beauty. Anyway, I was there in the early 50s. A close friend of mine was involved in our nuclear tests, and I asked if I could go along on a viewing ship. It was not inappropriate for me to do that because, among my many financial interests, I had a nuclear lab and a developmental center. So that was out in Utah.
You make weapons?
I used to. Now, in any event, we were on this ship, this battleship, not far from where this detonation was to take place, which is near an island known, interestingly enough, as Christmas Island. We'd been told the bomb was going to be a small one,
so none of us was particularly worried. Even though I'd never seen one going off, I figured, well, these people must know what they're doing. Actually, the truth is, I was in a kind of a funk. You know, because I hadn't come all this way just to see a little bomb. I was disappointed. I want some big time stuff. And I'm not ashamed to say that either. There's a glitter to nuclear weapons. I had sensed it in others, and I felt it in myself. If you come to these things as a scientist, it's irresistible to feel it there in your hands, so to speak. The ability to release this energy that fuels the stars, to make it do your bidding, to make it perform those miracles, to lift a million tons of rock into the sky, and all from a thimble full of stuff. Just irresistible. Well, we were standing by the railing when the countdown started. We could hear it on the PA. We'd all been adequately briefed. We were in our suits, some kind of lead with a tinted visor over our helmets. And then I saw these birds. Albatrosses. Phenomenal creatures, truly. They'd been flying beside the ship for days, accompanying us to the site, so to speak. These birds have tremendously long wings and tails and beaks that seem fashioned for some other purpose. They're just beautiful creatures. Watching them was a wonder. And suddenly, I could see they were smoking. Their feathers were on fire. And they were doing cartwheels. The light persisted for some time. It was instantaneously bright, and it lingered long enough for me to see the birds crash into the water. They were sizzling, smoking. They were not vaporized. It's just that they had absorbed such intense radiation, they were consumed by the heat. And so far, there'd been no shock, none of that blast damage we talk about when we discuss the effects of these bombs. Instead, there were just these smoking, twisting, fantastically contorted birds crashing into things. Well, I'd never seen anything like this in my life. And I thought, this is what it'll be like at the end of time. And we all felt the thrill of that idea.
Now I know where we'd met. It was at our place, our apartment. We were living in the city then, and some friends came by to see our child. He'd just been born. Obviously, one of them brought Stone. Who? Doesn't matter. Stone was there. I can see him in the corner, listening as I tell one of my friends what has happened. But evil? Our son had just been born. We brought him home. He was, what, 5 days old, I guess. And then one day my wife went out, and I was left alone with him. And I was very excited because it was the very first time I was alone with him. And I picked him up, this tiny thing, and started walking around the living room. We lived on a high floor overlooking the river, the Hudson. Light was streaming in. It was a lovely, lilting autumn day, cool, beautiful. And I looked down at this tiny creature, this tiny thing, and I realized I had never had anyone completely in my power before. And I'd never known what that meant. Never felt anything remotely like that before. And I saw I was standing near a window, and it was open. It was but a few feet away, and I thought, I could drop him out. How easy it would be to drop him out. And I went toward the window, because I couldn't believe that this thought had come into my head. Where had it come from? No one part of me felt anything but love for this boy. Not one part. My wife and I had planned. We were both in love. There was no anger, no resentment, nothing dark in me toward him at all. No one could ever have been more in love with this child than I. As much, yes, but more, no.